Welcome to Parenting Matters on Nashville Catholic Radio, WBOU 100.5 FM, sponsored by the Family Life Office of the Diocese of Nashville. Your host for the program is Dr. Parr Donahue. Dr. Parr has years of experience in pediatrics and parenting. He was named the Senior Pediatrician of the Year by the Tennessee Chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics in 2014. Dr. Parr is the author of four books, including books on parenting entitled Messengers in Denim, The Amazing Things Parents Can Learn from Teens, and Tools for Effective Parenting. Visit Dr. Parr's blog at www.parentingwithdrparr.com. Here's your host, Dr. Parr Donahue.
Welcome to Parenting Matters on WBOU 100.5 FM and streaming throughout the world on WBOU.org. Our subject today is the military an option for your kids. Our special guest is U.S. Air Force Colonel Robert Fink. Before I introduce him, a bit of history. In 1919, after the First World War, the number one song in America radio was, "How Are You Gonna Keep 'Em Down on the Farm After They've Seen Paris?" The lyrics highlighted concern that America's rural soldiers would not want to return to the farm after experiencing the European city life and culture of Paris. The song was sung again by many World War II men, probably as an excuse to join the military. During the First World War, men had to be 18 to volunteer, or 17 with parental permission, yet many were younger boys who lied about their age in order to serve in the military. The youngest reported to be only 12 years old. These young men were led by an overwhelming feeling of patriotism. Prior to the Second World War, on September 16, 1940, Congress, by a wide bipartisan margin in both houses, gave birth to the draft by passing a bill requiring all men aged 21 to 36 to register to serve in the United States military. The following year, the United States was involved in the war, and the draft was expanded to include all men aged 18 to 37. Even then, many boys lied about their age in order to serve their country, fueled once more by a feeling of patriotism. Well, after the turmoil of Vietnam, and partly because of protests against the Vietnam War, the draft was changed in the mid-60s. Men still had to register, but gradually the military became completely voluntary. During that process, medical students were required to serve 2 years in the military after finishing medical school and an internship, unless they had been given a deferment to complete a specialty residency. The so-called doctor's draft allowed newly minted doctors to choose their military service and to select which base they preferred. I did not have a deferment back then and chose to enter the United States Air Force. Because war was festering in Vietnam and Mary and I had 3 sons, ages 3 and under, I selected Ellsworth Air Force Base in Rapid City, South Dakota, thinking no one else would choose that desolate part of the United States. And I most likely would not have to leave Mary home alone with 3 infant sons. Consequently, I served both of my years in the heart of the Black Hills. Now, I could spend hours telling of the good things and the not-so-good things that Mary, especially, and I had to tolerate, but all in all, it was a great experience. I came into the Air Force thinking I knew everything about medicine and being a doctor. But my first patient was an officer's wife with a bad cold. I had no idea what to do for a cold. If she had had pneumonia or had broken her arm, I could have taken care of her. But how do you treat a cold? A brief curbside consultation with one of the experienced doctors who had served already a year, and I was back on the next learning experience. And I had a lot to learn. I learned how to help airmen and dependents with their day-to-day medical problems and many of the other difficulties of everyday living. In the process, I stacked up thousands of questions to ask the professors when I became a pediatric resident. So many questions, in fact, that the chief of pediatrics once told me, "No one will ever be able to answer all of your questions." But probably most important of all was that I matured during those years. Without that time in the stifling hot summers and frigid snow-packed winters of South Dakota, I would not be the man I am today, some 50 years later. Thank you, United States Air Force, for all you did for me and my family, and for what you have continued to do for men and women in uniform, and for all people lucky enough to live in the United States and others all around the globe. Now I'm honored to introduce Colonel Robert Fink. Colonel Fink was born in Huntington, Indiana, and has a bachelor's degree in civil engineering from Notre Dame, where he studied under an Air Force ROTC scholarship. His first assignment was in New Mexico. There he met his wife and married Maria. Later, the Air Force sent him to the University of Texas for a master's in structural engineering. He taught engineering for 4 years at the Air Force Institute of Technology at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Dayton, Ohio. He served 20 years in the United States Air Force and is now the senior aerospace science instructor in JROTC at Cane Ridge High School. He and his wife, Maria, have a son, a daughter, and 4 grandkids. Welcome, Colonel, to Parenting Matters on WBOU 100.5 FM and streaming throughout the world at WBOU.org.
Thank you.
You said in your pre-show bio that you love teaching JROTC. What makes it so lovable, so special?
Well, I think teaching in general provides an opportunity to affect young people more than most any other job. And ROTC, I learned, was even more special. As I was coming up and getting ready to retire, I thought I'd wanted to teach math because the teachers seemed to have the biggest influence on me and maybe steered me towards a degree in engineering and a career in that field were my math teachers. And so I thought maybe I'd like to teach math. And I went through a program in Connecticut called the Alternate Route to Certification because I'd already had a ton of math courses, but nothing to have a certification for teaching. And I did student teaching, was kind of all set to go down that route. And as I got closer to retirement, I was having a discussion with one of our recruiters. And I told him I was really going to miss the military, but I was looking forward to teaching. And he says, well, why don't you teach junior ROTC? And I was peripherally aware that it existed, but it didn't exist in the one high school in my small town that I went to, and I didn't understand that it was retirees that taught the program. When I went through ROTC at Notre Dame, it was young men, active duty personnel that were my instructors. And so I looked into it. I went to a nearby high school that hosted a junior ROTC program in Connecticut, and got to talk to the kids, and they absolutely loved the program. They were just, were anxious to, yep, to share with me how the program has changed their lives and made them more confident and made them more responsible. And I thought, well, this is pretty cool. And as far as teaching at the high school, I think that the best part is had I been a math teacher and say I taught, algebra 2 or trigonometry or calculus or something, I'd probably see the kid either his junior year or his senior year or something, and maybe the next year in the hallway. But in ROTC, many of our kids will be there for all 4 years. Mm-hmm. And just to see the kids grow from freshman, sophomore, junior, senior year, especially the boys. I mean, the girls come in a little more mature than the boys, mm-hmm, and the boys are playing catch up for 4 years.
Yep.
And some of them, after doing this for, this is my 19th year.
Holy cow.
And so, you see the same cycle over and over, mm-hmm, and over, mm-hmm, and you'll see the kid who comes in as a freshman. You kind of almost are wondering, what's he going to be like in 3 years? Because some make good choices and others make bad choices and stuff. But it's really, really, really gratifying to be able to be there for a few years with the same kids and see how they...
Well, that's what I liked about pediatrics. Actually, I concentrated my practice on adolescents. And to see those kids mature and grow through the years, it's just so phenomenal. And I had a little bit to do with that. it makes you feel really good. You know that I work at MEPS, Military Entrance Processing Station,
right,
where we do physicals on the military candidates. And I see so many from Cambridge that say, oh, I know Colonel Fink. I know Colonel Fink. And they speak so highly of you. What you do impresses those students. The question I have sort of peripherally is, do you think that most teachers have that same something, the interest, love for the students?
Well, if they don't love the students, they're in the wrong field. But I don't think I have anything special. I think it's more like I was describing the program as special.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't make the program special. I guess it makes me special if they think that, you know, they like Colonel mm-hmm. Fink and mm-hmm. stuff, because mm-hmm. It is different that you get to know the teacher better, because it's not just that they're with me for more years.
Mm-hmm.
There's after-school programs. There's field trips. We go out of state overnight, do things. Usually our field trips, we combine something that qualifies as what Junior RTC calls a CIA trip, a curriculum in action trip.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we'll go and we'll visit an Air Force base or something. But while we're there, there might be, you know, for instance, when we go snow skiing up at Paley Peaks, we stay at Fort Knox and we go to the Patton Museum of Armament. Or when we go whitewater rafting over in the Ocoee, we'll go to a Civil War battlefield museum. We'll go down to Pensacola because there's the Naval Air Station there with the Museum of Flight, the Naval Museum of Flight. Well, and there just happens to be a beach there too.
You know?
So,
of course.
and then we march in the local parades and stuff. Uh-huh. And I think particularly sharing meals and stuff and having is when the kids bond with one another and with me and with Sergeant D. There's two instructors. And that's great too, because without Sergeant D, the program stops.
You know, I have two grandsons who were in JROTC, not at Cambridge, but at Ravenwood, and they just loved it. I mean, and I was over there one night, and one of the boys never was very mature. But it was the night they were giving out the awards. And all of a sudden, I looked back, and there he was, getting at some tables back there and organizing. Hey, come on, we got these guys together. And they moved these tables and put some chairs out there. Boy, he's learning something someplace.
Yeah. If the program had been in my high school, I kind of, thinking back how I was, I doubt if I would have done it. But had I done it, I would have benefited a lot.
Oh, I don't even know if they had JROTC when I was in high school. But I know I would have never joined it. And I wouldn't have joined the Air Force had I not been drafted. So I think that draft done so much for so many people. And I see so many kids who have the opportunity to mature and to get their life going on the right path because they joined the military. And they're not either capable financially to go to college or some not academically. But some go because of... they want to mature. They want to get a new life. Tell me, if you were to talk to parents, and I'm sure you do, about JROTC, what would you tell them was the reason that they might want to join that?
I'd say, especially kids that have some motivation, they want to excel, but are perhaps lacking some self-confidence or motivation, those are good candidates. You know, before we start recording, we were talking about the daily briefings.
Yes.
And every day, every class starts with the Pledge of Allegiance and a Cadet Honor Code, and then somebody will stand up, and one of the students who's assigned to do so will stand up and say, "Today's briefers are," and they'll introduce the briefers for world news, local news, sports news, opinion or commentary, and did you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the five kids will go up there, and it's just funny because it's, you know, this first, we start just from the first day of school, we start throwing them up there, and the kids that are in there that you know, because a lot of people are uncomfortable speaking up front. And they'll just be so nervous. They'll try to like put little note cards in their hands or something. But it's just one of those things that's uncomfortable at first. But if you just do it, it's just no longer uncomfortable.
Because,
mm-hmm. you know, just 4 weeks later, they'll say, oh, okay, such and such is absent. Do I have any volunteers for this? And, oh, yeah, I want to do it. You know, just something that simple can change their level of self-confidence. And then when you get to other tasks, you know, like I said, going snow skiing or whitewater rafting or rappelling down a wall, those are things where there's a little bit of fear involved. And when they overcome that, they're like, well, you know what? If I can do that, what else can I do?
Yeah.
And I think that's probably the biggest thing is just growing in some self-confidence and also interpersonal skills, because every class is a flight. And mm-hmm. so they're competing against the other five flights for best at drill, honor flight, best at PT. And so they have to develop that teamwork and the communication, and people have to, you know, because if somebody's missing uniform day, it counts against the whole team, the whole flight. And so there's going to be some positive peer pressure for the person to make the right decision and wear the uniform or make up that missed day because he's affecting the rest of the team.
Sure. And this kind of, as we're talking, kind of reminds me a little bit about the Boy Scouts, because they have that same honor code, not the very same code, but a code of honor, and they try to mm-hmm. do the right thing for the right reasons and get rewarded for success. I think that what you've said is the success leads to success, just like failure leads to failure. So the more successes you can have in one part of your life, the more you can have in the other ones. The other thing that I'm so impressed with, you know, I had the privilege of reading one boy's application essay for West Point. And in it, of course, he said, I don't have his in front of me, and I can't quote it personally, but he said something, that if I have to make the ultimate sacrifice, I would consider it an honor to have served such a great country. Do you think that many of the kids go into JROTC with this sort of Patrick Henry attitude, or do any of them come out with that attitude?
Sadly, or realistically, I'd say no.
No.
It'd be more likely, I think, for them to come out with it than go into it
okay.
that way. Uh-huh. But even then, I think that's just rarer these days. Now, I've had some kids that after high school will enlist in one of the armed services. And when they come back from basic training, where they kind of break them down and rebuild them, mm-hmm. they come back with a much stronger sense of patriotism and love of country and a willingness to lay down their life, perhaps. Mm-hmm. And even then, though, there's that temporary high just coming out of basic training that I suspect kind of fades with time, too. I did 10 years active duty Air Force and 10 years active duty Guard. And one of the things I noticed in the Guard was that the recruiters didn't have a big problem filling all the positions because, you know, there's various incentives and stuff. But it seemed like the sales pitch was always, we're going to give you free college. We're going to do this. We're going to do this. And it seemed like it was all about you. And then when it came time when their first, you know, enlistment's up and they're looking for retention, all of a sudden, they're, you know, I've already got my degree. I've already got this. I've already got that. What can you do for me now? Mm-hmm, and it seems like the sales pitch was all about what your country can do for you. You know?
Well,
and so you know, it to me it didn't seem like a surprise that when you told them that it was all about what we can do for you, that when we had nothing else to do for you, that they would get out. And to me, it seems like if a stronger part of that appeal was to touch on their, you know, sense of patriotism, you're going to be more likely to find somebody that's going to stick in after their first enlistment.
Hmm. Well, how many kids do you think go from your program into the military?
You know, I'm going to guess maybe probably between 10 and 50%. And the reason I say guess is because they don't typically, you know, some go directly into the Air Force. Like mm-hmm. I've got, or not Air Force, but into the Armed Forces. And I've already got some this year who are already committed mm-hmm. that haven't even graduated yet. So I know about those. But then there's others who don't go directly into the military and we lose touch and I don't know mm-hmm. for sure. It may be more than 20% even, because like I say, you know, eventually maybe they'll make that decision. But of those that go directly in, it's probably just a little over 10%. But I know that probably the real number might be double that.
But in all it's certainly made them better men and women, don't you think?
The program?
Mm-hmm.
I think the program's the best thing any high school can offer.
Yeah. So. Now, let's move on to the military itself. The military offers a lot of, like I said, a lot of things for you, you know, free education and GI Bill, all that kind of stuff. Some of them are even giving bonuses for sign-up bonuses.
Right.
And could you tell me just a little bit about those sign-up bonuses? Because I just know some kids, and I'm getting a $10,000 sign-up bonus. So really, I think sign me up, you know.
Yeah. I know that they have there are bonuses for specific career fields that are hard to fill. I imagine those vary depending upon what positions they're having a hard time filling at the time, and the amounts of money probably vary too. So it's kind of like a moving target. So I don't really know specifics uh-huh. on that. That'd be something that if you called a recruiter, they'd probably be able uh-huh. to tell you everything about that.
Well, I've talked to them a little bit, and the thing that impresses me is that I would think that you would need a lot of bonus to get somebody to go into infantry. But they were going into infantry all over the place. But give a bonus to go into become a medic. So really, $10,000 and $20,000 in some services.
Yeah. Well, so, Well, there's bonuses to get you in that career field, but there's other career fields that because they have a greater risk.
Yeah.
That's part of their compensation anyway. Everyone who has a certain rank is going to have the same base pay, mm-hmm. and then that's the only part they call pay, mm-hmm. and that's the only part of your pay that is taxable. Mm-hmm. But then there are other, what do they call them, allowances. There's allowances for food, allowances mm-hmm. for housing, mm-hmm. and it'd be the same thing that there'd be a bonus pay. It's probably not the right word. You know,
hazardous duty.
Hazardous duty. If you're disarming bombs and stuff like that, and there's flight pay for pilots, and so that's additional compensation. That's not like your signing bonus or something. It's just additional money because you have a hazardous duty.
Well, one of the other things that I think was so rewarding for the kids is that. Gives them sometimes a profession. You see, people learn how to fly airplanes. Mm-hmm. They learn how to repair airplanes and do the aircraft maintenance, and then get a job when they get out. So I think that people go in there knowing that the military will do something for them, but they also, a lot of the kids I see, are gung-ho. They're going to go and do what their grandpa did and their dad did and their uncle did because our family serves in the military. I see a lot of that.
There are a lot of military families, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any family in the military?
Well, my dad went there, and it was kind of what you described. He was in for 2 years uh-huh. because he needed to be in for 2 years.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
He started working at our Sunday visitor when he was only 16 years uh-huh. old, uh-huh. and then went to Notre Dame, majored in journalism. But he had the 2 year commitment. He went through ROTC while I was at Notre Dame mm-hmm. because he was going to go in for 2 years no matter what. So he figured might as well go in as an officer.
Sure.
And after those 2 years, he went back to our Sunday visitor, and he's done how many years? 72 years in Catholic press now.
Oh my goodness. Holy cow. Well, speaking about our Sunday visitor, one of the things that impressed me really, really a lot when I went to visit the military base at West Point we went to the ring ceremony. And the ring ceremony, the kids get their class rings, and the class designs their own ring. Each ring every year is different. And they even make a wine from some wine with a wine bottle with their class on there and their class insignia, which they made. But the rings are that they get when they retire or when they die, or the family can give those rings back to West Point, and they melt those rings down and they put them in the pool of gold for the next class ring. And then at the ringing ceremony, they read off the names of all the people whose rings that were used to make up the class. I thought that was pretty impressive. But most impressive was I learned that you can take God out of our public schools, but you're never going to take God out of West Point. They prayed at every ceremony, they prayed at every meal, but they prayed all the time. They prayed more there than they did when I was going to St. Mary's College. It was really interesting how the attitude they had towards our government in our church. So there are a lot of kids, when I was in high school, only the kids who didn't graduate high school would go to the military. I mean, that was always dumb. We got to send them to the military. Nowadays, man, you see a lot of kids who are really sharp going to the military to get education. And yet I think there are those kids out there who don't need to go to college. And those are the ones who, I have a cousin, a nephew, who's going to welding school. And gee, go to welding school, he can call his own job at his own place and his own salary for the most part. And it's the same with the aircraft mechanics and even vehicle mechanics. So I think the military has a lot to offer kids, and in return, there's something that they give back to their country, too, I think. We are about out of time. I'm afraid that it's used up already, and we always have this problem. But thank you, Colonel, for coming and sharing your time with us this morning and for all you do while serving our country. Back those 20 years and these 20 years you've spent with the Jay Rotsey.
It's been my honor.
It's been a lot of pleasure. I'm sure it's been pleasurable for you and for the kids. And a big thank you, too, to our listeners. Without you, we wouldn't exist. You are listening to Parenting Matters on WBOU 100.5 FM and streaming throughout the world at WBOU.org. Before I sign off, one quick story. Some months ago, I saw an 18-year-old kid. I call him Nat. Perhaps you heard me tell this story before, but it merits repetition. It's one of the reasons I enjoy working with the military candidates. Nathan Nat was born to a single mother and was joining the Army at the age of 18 to escape a very abusive childhood. He was beaten by several of his mother's serial boyfriends. One raped him before he started kindergarten. When mother and the child's molester faced the judge reportedly told mom she could choose between her son or her boyfriend, and she replied, "I'll take my boyfriend." Thus began Nate's experience in and out of foster homes. Mom soon became drug dependent and spent several terms in jail, each time losing custody of Nate, only to have him returned to her when she was released. She was in jail and in foster home when Nate near the end of his high school junior year. He contacted his uncle, who agreed to let Nate work in his sawmill in exchange for room board and a small salary. That small salary let Nate buy a junker car during the summer before senior year started. But when senior year started and Nate realized he only needed two classes to graduate, he arranged his schedule so he could work Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. But when his uncle found out he wasn't working full-time, he threw him out of his house because he said, "I don't need a loafer sitting around here 2 days a week." Nate lived in his car until the end of Christmas vacation. He had no money for food, and he would take food from the school on Friday to get through the weekend. But with the Christmas vacation and school out, he had no food because money was gone. At the end of that vacation, he was downtown one morning, got out of his car, and fainted in the street. Luckily, two passerbys picked him up, took him to the hospital, where they gave him food and fluids, and called his social worker, who called Grandma. She agreed to keep him until it was graduation. He told me all these things. I said to him, "Nate, how did you ever survive?" And he said, "Well, I'm a committed Christian." And I said, "Really? So am I, but just how did that help?" He said, "Jesus taught forgiveness." I was struck dumb. My face, I'm sure, showed it. "Forgiveness," I said. He said, "Yes, forgiveness. Forgiveness is the basis of mankind. Only man can forgive." Now, not every kid who joins the military has a story like Nate, but enough of them do to reassure me that our nation is in good hands. Now for your homework, get your family together, especially your high school kids. Go to my website, www.parenting-matters.com, and listen again to what Colonel Fink told us about the military. Discuss the military as an option with your kids. Then click on comments and send us your thoughts and those of your kids on this option. Of course, no one can make a decision based on one short discussion, but put it in your memory bank for use in the future. And if there is a topic you would like to hear discussed on Parenting Matters, let us know. We will find an expert to tell you all about it. Thanks for listening, and may God continue to bless you and your family.
Thank you for listening to another edition of Parenting Matters with Dr. Parr Donahue. Parenting Matters is produced and recorded inside the studios at the Catholic Pastoral Center. Thanks again for listening to WBOU 100.5 FM and streaming at WBOU.org.